Hey everyone, Clay here. If you like the Rotten Horror Picture Show, why not head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile and sign up for our Patreon, where you can help support the show and also follow as Amanda and myself cover all sorts of other movies. We usually do a movie a month. This year we're doing reboots and remakes. So the likes of Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Wicker Man and The Blob and Nightmare on Elm Street and Suspiria. So if that's something you're into, we've done a whole bunch of other sets. We've done Friday the 13th series, the Halloween series, Second String of Stephen King, Video Nasties. We got so many things to listen to. So head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile, throw us a measly couple dollars, and get access to all of the horror movie content and all of the dulcet tones of my voice you can possibly handle. Amanda will be there too. All right, thanks, guys. Hello! Welcome to the Rotten Horror Picture Show, the horror movie podcast where we talk about films off the Rotten Tomatoes 200 Best Horror Movies of All Time list. My name is Clay, and with me, as always, is Amanda? Amanda? Amanda! Amanda's not here. I guess it's just me. That's right. It's just me. Amanda is on vacation, and I was just on vacation, and so I figured I would do a quick, I don't know if it's going to be quick, episode where I run through some movies I've seen lately of the horror variety that we most likely probably won't be covering on the show anytime soon. Not because they're necessarily bad or good, it's just we got a lot to get to. So, and I also wanted to take some questions, so I put the feelers out there, and I'll answer some questions from the audience. First up, I guess in no particular order, I guess I'll go with what I saw most recently, was the movie Together, written and directed by Michael Shanks. Unless you follow plagiarism law, but we can get to that in a minute. And starring Dave Franco and Alison Brie. This is the one where it's a couple who start to get meld together in sort of a grand shunting kind of situation over the course of the film, and it's a big metaphor for relationships and stuff. And I got to say, I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I'm happy that freaky body horror seems to be making a comeback between this and The Substance, which I assume we're going to be doing The Substance on the show, but man, that goes from freaky body horror into full-on trauma-level exploitation goop fest in the last 20 minutes, which is pretty excellent. But this one was good, despite Dave Franco. I think he's a terrible actor. I know that they're married in real life, but I think the movie would have been... I think it would have benefited from another person playing across Alison Brie who could actually match her skill level. I would say my biggest drawback is maybe they didn't go far enough. 'Cause they kind of... They do little bits and pieces... excuse me. Of body horror stuff that admittedly is pretty good, but they save the big one for the end, as you always do. And I don't know. I mean, I guess they could have pushed it. Maybe I'm letting Substance blind me, but I would say if you get a chance, check this one out because it's worth seeing. Now, let's take a question. This question is, I would like to know more about the randomizer which selects the next episodes. Well, I can't tell you a lot about it because it is proprietary technology. It's a very complicated system. It was actually originally created by NASA to help spaceflight. But to give you a basic rundown of what it does and how it works, I basically ask my Alexa to pick a random number, and then I correlate that number with a number on the list. And if it's a movie we haven't done before, then we do that movie. That's about it. Sorry to pierce the veil for you on that one. It's not really that interesting. Okay, next up is Weapons, which is written and directed by Zach Cregger, who is the mind behind Barbarian. It stars Josh Brolin and Julia Garner. Loved it. Thought it was great. It's definitely not a standard horror film, and it plays a lot with point of view and time and all those fun things. And it does a great job of giving and withholding information depending on what part of the story it's in. It reminded me in that way a little bit of Strange Darling, which is actually a movie that is on our list now. I don't really know if it belongs. Strange Darling is good. I don't know. I don't think I would call it a horror movie, but it is it's worth watching. But that does a similar thing where you're conceiving the story one way until you get the next bit of information, which can completely change the way you're looking at things. Weapons isn't quite that extreme. But it does play with a lot of that stuff. It's got some pretty good freaky scares in it. What's her name? Julia Garner's really good. Brolin's really good. Benedict Wong shows up and has a small part, in which is pretty great. And Alden Ehrenreich, is that how you pronounce his name? Han Solo there. He was good. He's always good. But I would definitely recommend Weapons. It is not, it's not a very straightforward horror movie, so you got to kind of get on its wavelength. I mean, not that, if you've seen Barbarian, you know that Zach Cregger likes to kind of play with he likes to manipulate the audience in a good way, I would say. So, yeah, I would say check out Weapons, worth seeing. Now, back to our questions here. Let's see, what do we got here? Questions. Okay. Would you guys ever consider doing Shadow of a Vampire? I think it would be a great follow-up to the various Nosferatus. You know, I should have thought of that at the time when we were doing the Nosferatus. Because that would have been a nice capstone to that series. I haven't seen it in a long time. I remember it being fine. I think I wanted it to be a lot better than it ultimately was. I think I've maybe seen it twice. But Willem Dafoe as the vampire, great casting. John Malkovich as Murnau, great casting. The recreations of the silent film filming, and also the whole concept that Max Schreck actually was a vampire, is pretty fun. You know, it's interesting that they had to go a story like that sprung up around that movie, because the truth about the people who made it is arguably even weirder than if it turned out that Schreck was a vampire. You know, I believe we talked about the where the writer of it got the idea. It's from when he was stationed in the mountains during World War I, and it's a pretty wild story, and there's lots of real life occult stuff built into it. So I can see, I enjoy a movie like that has a certain amount of myth built into it, true or otherwise. What I should have done is I should have, for the five movie set section, we should have done the 1922 Nosferatu, the Herzog Nosferatu, the remake, the Eggers Nosferatu, Shadow of a Vampire, and then capped it off with the episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark, where they that takes place in the movie theater, where they get that film reel from Dr. Vink that has a very Nosferatu-looking vampire in it. Because that scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. It's a great-looking vampire, too. Anyway, moving on. Just do another question. For Clay, have you ever had any interest in developing screenplays or working on film projects using your writing powers and skills? Yeah, definitely. I've done a little bit here and there. I had worked on a screenplay that as yet has not been developed a couple of years ago. I've never done anything like on spec or anything like that. I'm usually, anytime I do something like that, I'm usually brought in to a project, by someone else. But, yeah, I mean, you know, clearly I like movies, so it would be a lot of fun to do and actually see something I've written be made in that way someday. But, you know, who knows? Maybe somewhere down the line, if I ever get off my ass and actually write something. Okay, the next one is a movie called The Home, which is written and directed by James DeMonaco and stars Pete Davidson. This one, James DeMonaco is actually the writer and director of The Purge, which I didn't know going in, because I didn't know anything going in, because I didn't actively choose this movie. It's part of, I saw it as part of this promotion that AMC Theaters does, which is, I think it's really cool, where I don't know how often, I don't know if it's once a month or twice a month or something, they have something called Screen Unseen, where for $5, you can go in and see a movie that you're not told what the movie is ahead of time. It's a new movie that hasn't come out yet, and you basically get a sneak preview without knowing what it is. And this instance, I went because it had been subtitled Scream Unseen, which is what they call it when it's a horror movie. And I thought, and I think most of the people in the crowd thought, that we were seeing Together, because it was pretty close to being coming out. And also in the previews beforehand, when the preview for Together came on, there were audible groans in the theater, because I think a lot of people were expecting that was the movie we were going to see. But it turned out to be The Home. It's fine. It was fine. It's a not horribly novel concept, where Pete Davidson ends up having to do community service, working at a old folks' home. And there's shenanigans happening at the old folks home, and things aren't what they seem to be, and it's okay. Highlights are John Glover is one of the main old people. John Glover, of course, you'd know him from Gremlins 2 or Scrooged, or he played Lex Luthor on Smallville. He also played the devil in a TV show that I loved that was only on for like 13 episodes, called Brimstone. Great show. At least I thought it was when I was 13 or whatever, when it was on. It was about this cop who gets killed, and it's basically the concept of Spawn, sort of, where this cop gets killed and he gets brought back to life by Satan because 13 demons have escaped hell, and Satan needs this guy to catch them, and the way he sends them back to hell is by shooting them in the eyes, because of course the eyes are the window to the soul or something. Anyway, love John Glover, huge fan anytime he shows up. And also Neelix is in it, and for any of you Star Trek Voyager fans who love or don't love Neelix, I would say don't love in this case. I would say it's worth seeing because the last 15-20 minutes or so is an absolute bloodbath, where Pete Davidson just goes on after finding out the horrible truth of what's going on in this old folks home, he goes on a killing rampage and absolutely just slaughters everybody. And that was fun. The lead up to it is hit or miss for me. It's a lot of, it's got a real, Rosemary's Baby, Wicker Man kind of thing, where ultimately it's revealed that everybody's in on it to a certain extent, and there's all sorts of like twists and turns to it that ended up all being part of the plan. And I'm a big fan of that. I think that's fun. However, I think it needs to be kind of plausible. And in this one, it bothered me just because it seemed like an excuse to really start pulling things out of left field, and just throwing these really strange twists and turns that kind of keep you off balance, maybe by design, I guess. Maybe some people would see this as a plus. But you start going like, wait, what? And then you kind of get out of having to resolve that stuff by just saying it was all part of the plot. I don't know. Mileage may vary on the home. I would say you can probably stay home if you're going to watch it. I don't really think you need to run to the theater for that one. Let's see. Questions. Will Amanda ever get to choose a wild card again, or will you continue to pick every single off-the-list choice yourself, curating entire Evil Dead and Alex Garland seasons while she gets nothing? I was going to give her the next few picks, but now I am going to reserve those for myself, and that is all your fault. So when she gets mad about it, I will point her in your direction. What's your viewing process for the films covered? Do you and Amanda always watch together and record straight after? If so, where and when? Address and exact time, please. Usually what we do, during the pandemic, we had started, as I'm sure many people had, we had started watching movies in a group with a lot of our friends, and we would basically all play the movie in our respective homes, and then we would jump onto Google chat and talk about it in real time. And we continued that. Originally, when we started the show, Amanda and I did not watch the movies together at all. And then after we had started doing this group thing during the pandemic, we continued that into the movies we were, Amanda and I were doing in that time. So it would, because it would be the two of us, and then a few of our friends would jump in as well, just because, you know, they had nothing else to do and watch another movie, why not? But then as things got back to normal, as much as you can say they are, basically everybody fell off of that except Amanda and myself. And so we just kind of kept up doing it. And so usually what we do is it's the two of us will line up in our respective homes, play the movie, and then we will chat as we're watching it over text. And if we can't, both find the time to do it, then we just don't talk about it till we record. as far as address and exact time, please. I can't really do that for you. I'm sorry. Okay. Thoughts on Bring Her Back? Might be my favorite horror of the year. Deeply unsettling atmosphere, some gnarly visuals, and an amazing performance by Sally Hawkins. Well, that was the next movie I was going to talk about. Bring Her Back. Directed by Danny and Michael Filippu, written by Danny Filippu and Bill Hinesman. These are all the minds behind Talk to Me, starring Billy Barrett and Sarah Hawkins. Yeah, I thought Bring Her Back is a tough one, because I thought it was great. I thought it was really, really good, but it is a downer of a movie, man. It is depressing as hell. It's pretty brutal. The gore's like it takes the more depressing elements of Talk to Me, as far as grief and loss and all that kind of stuff, and really just pretty explicitly focuses on that and dials it up to 11. And it's really good, and you will be thinking about it, and it will make an impression. But I don't know if it's a movie that you're going to throw on at a party or something, or just, you know, a bunch of people come over and say, oh, you know, we're having fun. Do you guys want to watch Bring Her Back? Unless you want everybody to leave, because I think everybody will, because it's a pretty grueling movie. But I would definitely recommend it. Quality alone, I think it's great. It's funny because we came out of that one. Amanda and I saw that together, and I said, man, it seems like these guys really have some grief that they're working through from their real life based on this movie and based on Talk to Me. Apparently not the case. I can't remember if it was her or her husband was saying, or maybe it was, I don't know, my girlfriend, I can't remember. No, it definitely wasn't my girlfriend. Was listening to a podcast interview with them, and they're just, you know, a couple rollicky Australian larrikins, you know? And they're like, no grief over here. And they just seem like guys who were, I guess this is what they're into, which is totally fine because, you know, they make good movies. So I can't really fault them on that one. Final Destination Bloodlines, directed by Zach Lipofsky and Adam B. Stein, starring Caitlin Santajuana. Excellent movie. And when you say a Final Destination movie is excellent, there's a big old asterisk next to that statement, because they're really movies you need to watch with a crowd. The best, I would say to date, the best film going experience I've ever had, and I've probably said this before, was seeing Final Destination 2 on opening night at midnight on 42nd Street in New York. It was a packed house, and when that opening highway scene hit with the logs falling off the truck and everything, that place absolutely lit up and went nuts. And then for the rest of the movie, every time it was approaching a new set piece and, you know, the Rube Goldberg machine started to roll, so to speak, you could feel the whole theater start to, you know, tense up and murmur and get ready for it. And then once the punchline hit, everybody would go crazy. And, you know, that's the great thing about seeing a movie with a bunch of people, is you can experience all that together. And in a movie like Final Destination, you have a lot of fun. And movie like Bring Her Back, you just, everybody experiences a crushing loss. And you just don't look at anybody or talk to anybody for the rest of the night. But Final Destination Bloodlines, the newest film in the franchise, by those criteria, great movie. Saw it in the theater, loved it. Great theater movie. The crowd was really into it. Wasn't quite as packed as it was for Final Destination 2. But even on top of that, I thought it was pretty clever. The trick with a Final Destination movie is how do you keep the gimmick going? And of course, the gimmick is a one person usually has a premonition about a disaster, which causes them to avoid the disaster. And anyone who is also because of this premonition avoids the disaster is now on death's hit list, and death needs to basically square the balance and kill everyone who was supposed to have died in the disaster. And how do you keep doing that, right? And you don't really get a lot of story out of that, because it's usually a bunch of strangers who just come together and have the same kind of conversations where it's like, you're telling me what? That's crazy. I don't have any time for this. And then they walk out and they explode or something, you know. This one actually brought a story to the proceedings by having it all based in a family. It's one family who's the grandmother of the family in the 50s ends up surviving one of these orchestrated, she has the premonition and survives the disaster. And when, by doing that, once she becomes aware of what's happening, of the whole gimmick of the movie, she makes it a point to keep herself as safe as possible, because at this point she's had a family and she's now has grandchildren, and none of those grandchildren should exist because she should have died in this disaster. And so she knows if death gets her, that because it goes in order of, I don't know, in order of who was supposed to die or whatever, then the rest of her family will get killed. And so the movie kicks off, and it's all family-based, so there's actually a story built into it, which is pretty good. And once things start rolling, it's surprisingly effective, seeing how the different family members react and the little twists and turns they throw at you. And there's some fantastic kills in it. There's one that I'm sure you've seen floating around at this point where someone gets sucked in and split and folded in half backwards into an MRI machine, which was all done practically. And it's a lot of fun. It's a big recommend for me. If that's one, if the Blu-ray for Bring Her Back has a scratch on it at your party, forget that one. Put on Final Destination Bloodlines and you'll have a much better time. It is also very poignant and bittersweet because it features the final performance of Tony Todd, who I think most people were surprised when he passed away, because, you know, I had no indication that he was sick. Once you see him in this movie, you'll go, ah, yes, he is sick, because he does not look great. However, he sounds great and his performance is great. And I think the part that he plays is a pretty fitting send off to him, as someone who has been a part of the franchise since the beginning and also a part of horror movie history for a very long time. So definitely check out Final Destination Bloodlines. Let's see. Have you been watching Alien Earth? As a big Alien and Noah Hawley fan, I've been enjoying it so far. I dig his sensibilities of honoring the original text in some ways, but then being super weird and original in others. The Xenomorph stuff might be the weakest part, actually, but I don't mind because the synth stuff is great. By synth stuff, I have not watched it yet. I'm looking forward to it. By synth stuff, my mind immediately went to like music, synthesizer music, which got me very excited. But I think you're probably talking about like robot stuff, which is, that's fun too. I have not watched it. Looking forward to it. Heard good things. I think Noah Hawley is great. I love Fargo. Fargo is one of those shows where it should not be. Probably A, shouldn't even exist, and B, definitely shouldn't be as good as it is. But that's a fantastic show. Also, Legion, really liked Legion. So looking forward to checking this one out. Speaking of shows that are shouldn't exist and shouldn't be as good as they are, when I was on vacation on the plane, I rewatched the HBO Watchmen series. Holy shit, man. What a good show. And it's still good, too, and it holds up, unfortunately, because it's, you know, continues to be relevant. Unfortunately. Okay, Companion, written and directed by Drew Hancock, starring Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid. This is a weird summer of Jack Quaid because he's been popping up in a lot of stuff, and I feel like you got to either take or leave him because he kind of does the same thing all the time. He kind of plays the lovable doof for the most part. However, I think he is best utilized already, which is kind of interesting because he's pretty early in his career. He's early enough that they can already subvert this. He's best utilized when the lovable goof thing is a cover for something a bit more sinister. And that's what happens in Companion. Companion is a film that I think would have been better served. If you don't know anything about Companion, do not watch a trailer. Just watch the movie. Because I think it would have been better served if you didn't know the hook, because the hook doesn't, the twist doesn't happen until, I don't know, maybe half an hour, 40 minutes into the movie. And everything that leads up to it is playing it pretty straight. And if you know what the hook is going into it, then you're kind of catching all these little bits that I think are meant to be secondary watch revelation stuff. So, yeah, I think it probably would have benefited if they haven't, if they didn't give that away. But if they didn't give that away, then I think it's a hard movie to sell. It actually kind of taught me a lesson about pitching and coming up with an idea. If you're going to have a twist, like a big fundamental status quo twist in a story that you're creating, you need to, I think you need to have a secondary twist that you can hold in your back pocket for the actual story. Because when I was writing Hardstyle Juice, which is the most recent book that I've done, it's a pro wrestling murder mystery, the core twist of the book is that this professional wrestler, there's this professional wrestling family. It's a father, a son who's a superstar, and a daughter who has grown up in the business, but she kind of wants to get out of there. And at the end of the first issue, the brother dies in the ring under mysterious circumstances. And I found myself kind of in a corner when talking about it, because in order to describe the rest of the story, you kind of have to give that away. And the way that the first issue of that book is written, which you can read for free on Amazon Prime, if you have Amazon Prime, head over to heartstylejuice.com. It'll take you right over to the book. The problem, the difficulty with trying to talk about the book is everything that happens after that first issue is predicated by the death of the brother. So unless you have a secondary, I think a lot of times you're going to need a secondary twist. So you can have the twist you sell it on, and then you have your secondary twist, which is the one that really gets people. Like that's you bring them in with the first twist, and then the second one is really the one that you really want to hit them with. That's just my theory anyway. We'll see if it works out. That being said, Companion, it's fun. It's good. I recommend Companion. Companion's a good time. Sophie Thatcher, fantastic. She's been popping up and stuff. I think she's a really good young actress. She's one of those actresses who every time I see her now, I go, well, she looks really familiar. What do I know her from? And then I look, she was one of the biker gang kids on Boba Fett, and she's on Yellow Jackets, and just kind of popping up and everything. But okay, now into the biggest disappointments section of films I've seen recently. Start with a light one. I don't even know if I would say I was disappointed by this, but it's Presence, which is directed by Steven Soderbergh, written by David Koepp. David Koepp, writer of Jurassic Park, among many other films. And starring Lucy Liu. The concept for, so this is a good example of what I'm talking about as far as, you know, your hook and your twist here. The hook of the movie is, it is a haunted house movie, but the entire film is from the first person perspective of the ghost haunting the house. It's a cool idea, and I think they do. To back up a little bit, I think Steven Soderbergh is very sneakily probably the best director working in the last 30, like of the new generation from the 90s. I think he's probably the best. His output is crazy. He's got a ton of stuff, but I think he's pretty consistently great, or at least he's, when he's good, he's very, very good. And I don't know if I've seen anything that he's done that I've outright not liked. For instance, he did the entire series, directed every episode of the show The Nick with Clive Owen, which is one of my favorite shows. Incredible show. Highly recommend that. So this one I was very interested in. It's a very interesting kind of high concept idea. And as I'm watching it, I'm something about it is not clicking with me. And it took me a long time to figure out what it was. And, you know, maybe mileage will vary. You might love this movie. You know, obviously, go with God if you do. I realized the thing that was bugging me is that by presenting... how do I put this? Horror movies are generally very voyeuristic endeavors, right? Like the whole idea is that you are watching a screen, kind of peering in on the events that are happening and unfolding, right? And so by making the camera an actual character in the movie, you're kind of taking away any sense of suspense or dread that comes along with a haunted house situation, because really it's no different than any other movie, because it's like you could say any movie you're technically the ghost watching the things play out. I'm not doing a great job explaining it, but it was something about having that, literalizing that idea that the camera itself is this viewing body in the story of the film, kind of undercut the entire concept of a ghost story, or, you know, kind of movies in general, if you really want to expand it out. It pays off in the last few moments with a really great final shot. But yeah, it didn't work for me. I mean, it looks great. Everybody in it's really good. But yeah, something about breaking that barrier, or like folding that barrier in on itself, did not make the concept work for me personally. But second on the disappointments list, I don't really know if I was that disappointed by this. I was not expecting a lot going into it. Was a movie called Werewolves, directed by Stephen C. Miller, starring Frank Grillo. It's kind of like The Purge, but werewolves, where every year or every however many, like the full moon, and then a bunch of people turn into werewolves, and then you got to outlast, and of course the werewolves get out, and I got to shoot them, and it's a pretty low IQ horror action thing. But even as far as that goes, ugh, boy, not good. It looks like shit. I'll tell you, man, as much as I appreciate digital video filming being something that is available or makes filmmaking available to everybody, as opposed to having this bar to get over with, you know, being able to afford film and film processing and all that kind of stuff. God, it looks like shit. You know, unless you've got a real master of the craft doing the cinematography, and you've got the highest end camera they make, and you've got all the money in the world to do the color timing, all that kind of stuff. It just looks like anytime I watch something and I get that video feeling when it first starts, I immediately, my stomach drops, because I know it just is not a marker of quality. That being said, even as far as movies go that are shot on video, this one looked pretty bad. Like the lighting was just, ugh. It was just not a pleasant looking movie in any way. And there was also this one kid character who I noticed immediately was wearing a shirt that had a spelling error on it. And it was supposed to say like something, something firehouse. And it said like FIERHOUSE. Like it was a clear error, and either nobody noticed it or they didn't have enough money to print another shirt. I don't know. But you know, the action was pretty boring. I will say the werewolves were pretty, I guess they look good. The transformations were kind of cool. There's a lot of practical werewolf stuff in it, so that's fun. But I was hoping that would raise the whole endeavor into a, hey, you know, it's not that bad for me. But yeah, it was no good. No good. And probably my biggest disappointment so far is Lee Whannell's The Wolfman. Lee Whannell is the director of the 2019 Invisible Man, which I thought was fantastic. I thought it was a great way to reinvigorate a character that's 100 years old and has had many, many movies made about it. And I was very excited after that movie because I had been saying for years like that the way Universal should reanimate, if you will, the Universal Monsters franchise is not to throw millions of, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars at it like they did with their Dark Universe bullshit and The Mummy, which was a movie so bad that when I like to watch bad movies when I'm sick, because at least it gives me an excuse. And that was so bad, I fast-forwarded through most of it. It was just, it was not good. And, you know, it killed the whole endeavor, which is probably for the best. But I had always thought that if you, instead of throwing that much money and trying to make them these big action spectacles, crossover things, make smaller movies and focus on the things being scary. And that will bring people back to the Universal model. Like, when was the last time there's a scary Frankenstein movie or a scary Dracula movie? You know, it's been a long time. And so that's basically what they did with Invisible Man, and I thought it worked great. And so when they said he was doing Wolfman, I got very excited because Wolfman has always been one of, if not my favorite Universal monster. And I was anticipating quite a bit seeing what Lee Whannell would bring to the equation. Unfortunately, this movie sucks. It's not good. It is all over the place. It's got it has a couple interesting things. Like the biggest conceptual change is that the Wolfman transformation happens like very slowly. And so I would say this is less a Wolfman movie and more like David Cronenberg's The Fly, where, you know, your main character here gets bitten or scratched or whatever, and then the rest of the movie is his gradual change into this final form creature. It doesn't work here. And they spend like 25 minutes with all of this backstory stuff involving the main character and his father and his horrible upbringing. And, you know, to the surprise of nobody, it turns out that the wolf that bit him was his father, who was now a wolf. And it's garbage. And the wolf design, if you want to even call it that, is not really a werewolf. I don't know. It's just sort of like a rabid old man kind of look. He doesn't look like a wolf. He looks like kind of a, he looks more like Brundlefly kind of. Yeah, big unfortunate miss for me. It's really looking forward to that one. Yeah, I would say don't even bother with that unless you're morbidly curious. Okay, let's do some questions here. Because no one bothered to prompt you at the live Jaws show, please discuss Cruising, either the Friedkin film or when you jerked off that guy under the Queensboro Bridge. no one was supposed to know about that, Kyle. I don't think that would work here because it's not quite as fun as having a captive audience listen to you explain the backstory of the William Friedkin's Cruising, which I got to watch William Friedkin do, and that's one of the great movie going experiences up there with Final Destination 2 was watching a Q&A for Sorcerer get hijacked by the crowd into questions about Cruising to the point where Friedkin just said, "Okay, do you want to hear about Cruising?" And everybody clapped, and then he just talked about Cruising for the next half an hour. So maybe at the next live show, if somebody asks me about Cruising, I'll do Cruising. What's the Clay and Amanda origin story? How did you meet and what horror stuff did you first bond over? How did we first meet? Amanda's husband is a good friend of mine. We've been friends since high school. And so I met her when they started dating. And it's one of those weird ironies of life where after we met, we realized we were from the same town. And not only was we were we from the same town, but she knew my sister, kind of. More specifically, she went to high school with my sister's best friend. And so we kind of had that in common and you know, kind of hit it off from there. What horror stuff did we first bond over? I honestly cannot remember. I don't know if it was any one thing in particular. It might have been the X-Files. I feel like the X-Files was I think we probably met around the time that I was doing an X-Files rewatch, and she was a big fan of that, and so we kind of crossed over there. But yeah, it was the kind of thing where I've always been a big horror person, and I've kind of, the people around me have various levels of patience or ability to converse about the subject. And so, basically we realized we were kind of on the same wavelength there. So we kind of bonded in that way. I don't remember anything specifically other than maybe talking about the X-Files, and it kind of went from there though. And then, so when I came time to do this show, I was thinking, you know, I figured she would be the best person to co-host it with me. And I hope everybody agrees. When are we going to cover the kill list? Kill list is on the list. We'll get to it eventually. You've never told the Jamaica story on the Rotten Horror Picture Show, leaving an entire listenership, literally dozens. Thank you. Ignorant to the defining story of a generation. Is now the time to change that? See, you can't just ask for the Jamaica story, Kyle. It has to happen organically. There has to be a reason for me to talk about the time I went to Jamaica and what happened therein. So maybe if we ever do the movie Popcorn, which was a horror movie that was shot in Jamaica, maybe then it'll come up. I'll have a reason to bring it up. You know, maybe if we do another movie about food waste, maybe then I'll bring it up then. I don't know. We'll see. Who's to say? The last two movies I want to talk about are not, they're probably more hidden gems than everything else. Everything else I saw in the theater, these last two are ones that I watched on Shudder. And I had the chance to see this first one in the theater, but it was playing in a festival around here, but I was busy or something. I don't know, something stupid. The first one is called, I think it's pronounced Frewaka. It's an Irish word. It's an Irish film. The Irish are actually doing some pretty good horror movies lately. There's a movie on our list that I'm really looking forward to talking about, which I think I've probably mentioned before, called Oddity, which I loved. I went into Oddity having not seen a trailer. I didn't know anything about it, and it blew me away. Really loved it. Frewaka is similar, where I think I hadn't even seen a trailer. I think I had seen a write-up for it. For this festival that it was playing at, and it just sounded really interesting. And so when it popped up on Shudder, definitely wanted to throw that on, and I'm glad that I did. I would say it's a folk horror film, and it's probably much less flashy than a lot of folk horror films can be. I guess... You might be able to translate that into not a lot happens, but it was a really interesting slow burn kind of movie that had a really fun ending, which features people in robes and animal masks, and is, you know, a big fan of that. So check that out if you get a chance. Written and directed by Eileen Clark, starring Claire Monnelly. It's a multi-generational story with some nice twists and turns in it. And it's if you're looking for something a little bit off the beaten path, it's a good one to check out. The last film I want to talk about is probably the one that I would recommend the most of everything I talked about today, because I feel like it probably has the least amount of widespread awareness, and it's called The Vordelak. And it is also on Shudder, hopefully still on Shudder. If it's not, hopefully you can find it somewhere else. Written and directed by Adrian Bowe, based on a story by... So, it's based on a story by Alexei Tolstoy. And it is the same story that the... If you've seen the Mario Bava movie Black Sabbath, there's a sequence, one of the three stories in that movie is also called The Vordelak, starring Boris Karloff, and it is based on the same story. In that movie, in Black Sabbath, they specifically don't put the first name of the writer, and they just write Tolstoy, so it seems a lot more impressive than it actually is. It's not Leo, it's, I don't know, his brother, his cousin or something. But anyway, it is a, it stars Casey Modette-Klein, and it is a, I believe it's a French movie. And it's a vampire story. And basically the rundown is that there's this family, and the patriarch of the family goes out looking for supplies or hunting or something. And they're afraid, because he hasn't come back, that he might have been gotten by the Vordelak, which is a vampire. And of course he has been, and bloodshed ensues. This version of the story features a, I guess there's an outsider. Yeah, there's an outsider in the other one too. He's kind of a French, kind of foppish 1700s type, powdered wig kind of guy, who ends up staying with this more like Eastern European family as all this stuff happens. And now that doesn't sound horribly novel, probably, except for the fact that the vampire is performed entirely by a puppet. And I don't, it's not like a, it's not like, you know, a Jim Henson felt puppet. It's not meant to be like funny. It's kind of like a human sized kind of skeletal vampire marionette sort of thing almost. And it is so cool. It is such a cool thing, such a cool idea. And it is a good movie. It's exactly the kind of movie that I would want to throw on sight unseen and just be knocked out by. Very bloody, very fun. Definitely check it out. Hopefully French subtitles don't put you off. Well worth your time. And when's the next time you're going to see a vampire movie that stars a giant puppet? You know? I don't know. Okay, last question. You indicated on a recent podcast, but I'm very interested to hear an American response to 28 years later, given how British it is. I love the swings it took, a big Brexit metaphor, and maybe the most shocked I've ever been at the ending of a film, but I imagine a lot of non-Brits didn't get a big reason why it was shocking. I loved 28 years later. I think a lot of people would agree that it wasn't the movie they were expecting. Not that I really knew. I didn't really go in with many expectations, because I knew that they weren't just going to redo the first one. But the way that it starts, it feels a little bit like well-worn territory, like the survivors group on the island with the causeway that is only open because of the tides, which is very, very cool. I really like that. That was awesome. But you know, that kind of stuff on the surface felt a little bit familiar to the post-apocalypse zombie thing. But as it went on, it just got more and more interesting, and the characters were so much more complex than you usually get in something like this. And yeah, I didn't pick up on all of the Brexit stuff, because you know, I don't have a really much of a frame of reference for that stuff. But there was a lot of stuff regarding the what was left of civilization on this island that was really unique and really good. And it wasn't until Ralph Fiennes shows up that it really got me. Like it that whole sequence with Ralph Fiennes is incredible. And it is such a left turn, again, from what I think anybody was expecting out of this movie. And the fact that they just stick with it is incredible. And the whole sequence is great. And I don't want to ruin it for anybody who hasn't seen it. But I didn't put that movie on my list of stuff we were going to talk about today just because I wouldn't be shocked if it ended up on our list at some point in a reshuffle. Or at the very least, I don't know, if Amanda ever gets another wild card pick, maybe she'll put that on and we'll do it on the show. But yeah, and as far as the ending, boy, I didn't pick up the implication as I was watching it, but as soon as I read about it, I was like, oh, of course, that's exactly what they look like. I guess I don't know if it's a big spoiler to say it's, as you say in your question, a group of ninja Jimmy Savills. But yeah, it's a really interesting way to end a movie and a very different tone shift. And I'm really looking forward to what happens in the next one and then the one that comes after that. Because I know they've already shot the second one, and I think the third one is going into production soon. And even if it wasn't, I don't know. I don't think this was like a huge hit. I think it was enough to get the sequel going. But I mean, you know, they got Cillian Murphy coming back for part of the second one and the entirety of the third one, and I don't think it'll be difficult to get the money for that. But it did seem very British, though, because there was a lot of it definitely felt like Alex Garland emptying the quiver, so to speak, as far as his thoughts on where Britain has come from and where it's going, and whether or not he's a fan. I mean, I'd love to hear what you thought of it. If I don't know if you've written anything about it, Kyle, or if you you know, want to on Discord, feel free to send it over. I'd love to hear more of your thoughts about it. and I think that is going to do it for us today on this small episode of the Rotten Horror Picture Show. Thank you guys for listening. If you'd like to follow us, you can head over to help support the show. Head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile, where Amanda and I are covering reboots and remakes this year. And we have Texas Chainsaw Massacre in August. September will be Nightmare on Elm Street, which Wes will be joining us for, because we have continued to torture him by only giving him movies that are objectively terrible. Although I'm curious. I'm curious how this movie... Apparently my dog is not happy about it. I'm curious how the Nightmare remake goes down with the three of us. I think it should be an interesting conversation at the very least. But thank you guys for listening. And we'll be back on the main feed in a couple weeks with Dr. Sleep. See you.